Buy your new phishing kits on sale now. And Stability AI CEO resigns due to instability. And AI is everywhere. And more is coming in 2025. This and much more in today's episode of MSP Dispatch.
This episode is presented by OIT VoIP. Enhance your clients' communication abilities with our VoIP solution, featuring integrated billing, on-demand training, and live US support. Collaborate seamlessly with Microsoft Teams integration and put your entire phone system in your pocket with MobileX. Improve your offerings and increase profitability with reliable service for 1/10 of the average MSP acquisition cost. To learn more, visit oit.co or dial 844-CALL-OIT.
Good morning and welcome to the March 29th episode of MSP Dispatch, your source for news, community events, and commentary in the MSP channel. My name is Tony Francisco, joined by my amazing co-host, Mr. Tom Lawrence. Tom, how are you doing? I love seeing you. Co-hosting with you is such a highlight of my, like, my month, actually. And then seeing you, still can't get over the time where, like, hey, is that Tom?
Yeah.
Like, we're just sitting there. We're just sitting there touching. We're having a great talk. And then once in a while, like, touch. Is that, this is real. It's not real. A virtual.
And I'm not on mute. So,
how are you doing, brother? Talk to me.
I'm doing great, man. Just got back from Chicago again, which is actually, you weren't there this time. It turns out if I go to Chicago again, like in a week after I was at Chicago, Tony doesn't appear. But someone that knows Tony did. So that made it fun.
No, that was even funnier. Hey, do you know this guy? I'm like, I do know this guy.
Yeah, I was in Chicago last week with him.
And then right after the show, I'm like, Tom, I'm going to New York. And he goes, I'm going to be there on Monday. I'm like, oh, we're just going to miss each other. So I'm going to watch my son play the cello at Carnegie Hall, which is really cool. And then our planes will literally go, hi, well.
Yep. And I'm just going to be watching bandwidth and Wi-Fi. We're doing Wi-Fi planning in New York place. So this is so fun. Yeah.
You know what we should do?
The news?
Get into the news. Yeah, let's do it.
All right.
In my first story from bleepingcomputer.com, a story from Bill Tolis, new MFA bypassing phishing kit targets Microsoft 365 and Gmail accounts. Cyber criminals are exploiting a new phishing platform called Tycoon 2FA to bypass 2FA protection and target Microsoft 365 and Gmail accounts. Discovered by Sequoia analysts in October 2023, it's been active since at least August of the same year. Operating similarly to the other adversary in the middle platforms, the latest version, released in 2024, utilizes 1,100 domains in numerous phishing attacks. It employs various stages, including distributing malicious links, filtering out bots, and presenting fake login pages to steal credentials and intercept 2FA tokens. This evolution includes significant modifications to enhance phishing and evasion capabilities, and over 1,800 Bitcoin transactions linked to the operator's wallets since October of 2019 indicate substantial operations. Tycoon 2FA, alongside platforms like LabHost, Greatness, and Robin Banks, bypasses 2FA protections. In response, Google emphasizes the effectiveness of security keys in combating such phishing attacks. Tom, this is where you and I go into a very, very clear discussion that is going to start with, can I get these phishing kits in a Groupon? But it ends with basic security practices. So why don't I pass this back over to you and say, what am I missing here? And have you used this 2FA hack? You have, I know you have, and that's how you're exploiting my stuff. Talk to me.
I have two videos on it.
Oh!
That's important to do. We've done a talk, and this talk's been done at ConnectWise events. We call it How I Would Hack You, and we talk about the use case and how you use a tool that's an open source tool called EvilGenix. And EvilGenix is a toolkit, not for hackers, but for red teamers to set up these type of token bypass and show how you can collect the tokens. Obviously, this is not EvilGenix. The person from EvilGenix does offer it as a service, but he validates who he sends it to, someone we know. Anyways, the concept is, and I think this is a good thing for security. Not that there's a good thing that's as a service is happening, where the good thing is it's taken this level of sophistication to get someone's token. We never thought about stealing the session tokens because it was hard to get. now with all the other things around there, 2FA, the way the Microsoft Authenticator app used to go from authentication fatigue, where we could just bother you until maybe you said yes on an app, to now requiring a number. So now that you have to type a number, you can't just say yes. So we've done everything we can to make these apps more secure. We are recommending people use things like password managers, which won't fill into a phishing site. So this is usually probably more targeted people that know their password and aren't trying to log in through a password manager. But think about all the different steps that it has taken to get this far with as a threat actor to be able to attack someone to grab that session token. That's because we've walled off all the other easy, low-hanging ways to do it. So it's still a measure of progress we have in security. We still have more to do. There's still more things to fix. We need everybody using password managers and understanding this. And, you know, it's just the evolution of things, but it's actually getting in some ways harder, but it doesn't look harder because it's now, you know, as a service, which means it can operate at scale, which means if only getting a small number of people, if one of those people happens to be the right person who can get their edge in to do a $10 million, $20 million ransomware, well, I can send out a million emails if I only need that one person who is at the big company to do it.
So this is, you've actually opened up a very interesting scenario. So I like to dazzle people with the basics, and because the basics are very easy independently. And if you start stacking them on, that stratification results into something big. And the hack that I've used continuously, which is so easy to replicate, is create a identical page. You can literally copy and paste the code of like a Bank of America and a Chase. And then you have a proxy Wi-Fi that takes you and sends you to that. You enter in the credentials and then it sends you to the real page, entering those credentials in there, yep. And then sends you. But now you have the logged data. And to you, there was no difference. You said, hey, this is great. I got in there. It looks and feels exactly like the page. And you do that. And what you do is you do this at a conference at an airport and you start racking up literally 1,000 web pages as people go to, if you don't have the web page, then it sends you, oh, hey, create this web page. It goes out, collects it, creates the web page, and now just does a simple automated, you can do this through automation. So is this, I'm doing a very simple version of this, and you understand exactly what I'm doing. This sounds to me like it is far more sophisticated. And I would love, maybe if are there any type of links, you have YouTube links or of this talk? Yeah. Okay. If we can put those in the show notes, that would be wonderful because I am so happy that you've actually talked about this because I think the sophistication behind this is well beyond what I just said, but the result is, in my opinion, the same.
They've just put more automation into it. And
yes.
It has several other layers that are in there. And of course, the most important part isn't me showing how you do it. It's me showing how you defend against it. That's the takeaway that I always make sure I have in a video. Like, here's everything it takes to get this done. Here's what you should adjust: your session token length. You adjust your system settings in Microsoft 365, your Azure token settings to these shorter lengths, which of course means you got to log in more often. But, you know, sacrifices.
Security or simplicity. You got to make the choice there.
But you know what you're talking about? To each other.
You mentioned AI, and that causes a huge amount of concerns for everyone. There, you actually have the next article about a CEO is stepping down because of AI concerns. So why don't we get into your story?
Absolutely. Aman Mostak, founder and CEO of Stability AI, has resigned from his position and the startup's board, marking a significant change for the company. With no immediate permanent replacement, Stability AI has appointed its COO, Shanshan Wong, and CTO, Christian LaFord, as interim co-CEOs. Mostak's departure is driven by his desire to pursue decentralized AI, advocating for transparent and distributed governance in contrast to the centralized structure of top AI startups like OpenAI and Anthropic. In addition, Mostak's decision comes amid Stability AI's challenges, including talent loss, financial struggles, with reports suggesting that substantial monthly spending and unsuccessful fundraising attempts. While previously prioritizing research and development over revenue, Stability AI now aims for cash flow positivity, focusing on the open models and enterprise adoption. Tony, what do you think?
I think it's hilarious that you and I literally just talked about this last week, and I was going on and on and on about decentralized AI and like how, and we were talking about, I think I specifically mentioned, I think I went way too far on that conversation. But now that I see the article, I'm like, oh, we were already here.
Yeah. You know, it kind of brings me back. Did you ever read, it's you know, being a developer, I'd be surprised if you didn't read this, The Cathedral and the Bazaar. It's a short essay from the 90s. It's about kind of top-down development, the cathedral of we prescriptively tell you what the text should be and what these things are versus the bazaar. There's always something for someone there. There's lots of people developing things, and it kind of serves better to go to the bazaar where there's all these different options. Yep. And to go a little further, there's a lot to be said for putting hands on. So we, as developers, I see we, because I was using Olama, and that's what I started. I said, I think our first opener
you killed
was
your llama.
Yeah. So that was how, it wasn't one of our articles, but that's actually how we started talking last week. Mm-hmm. But coming back to it, I really think there is a lot for this. I mean, who doesn't want to be able to play with it in their hands? We know over and over, especially because it's so cutting edge and people are figuring out how to extract data from these. We want to make sure that if our data goes in, that we have access to the data and it doesn't go, well, let me give Tony that data that he asked for. Who cares that it was in Tom's bin? We've somehow broke the veil of, you know, dividing lines because we're not sure how these neural networks work well enough. And it's race to get product out first, not make it secure first. So what do you think,
Tony?
You're hitting
it on the head. The concept of why don't we deliver as quickly as possible. So let me pause for a second. So everyone who's watched this show, you've heard me say this no less than 100 times. I live and breathe by this framework. If you can't explain it, you don't understand it. We can all agree with that. That's just a general common sense, kind of a rule of engagement. If you can't explain it, you don't understand it. But once you understand something, once you understand the mechanics of it, the anatomy of how it all fits together, you can now manage it because you know where you can be effective and efficient. And frankly, it was just a waste of your time. This is AI, the large language models, 99% of the people out there, outside of parroting something that you heard in a podcast about large language model, you don't understand how a large language model works. You don't understand, you know, what does the database structure look like? What does the data model look like? What is the recall and the repository, the caching component? What are those tokens actually look like and where are they stored in relation to the database? And can they be repurposed, reused, and how long are they actually existing for? And more importantly, what you said, recalled by someone else, thereby exploiting the very security that everyone's hoping for. No one can really explain that, but we're pushing it so quickly out to get to the market. What are the security implications? Massive, yeah. Massive.
Well, and everyone's in a race to take the large, you know, corpus of data that each company has and let AI sort through it to make it more accessible to employees. That completely makes sense, right up until you realize you have RBAC controls for a reason and you don't necessarily want your database developer doing queries like, what does the president of the company take home? Or
just ACLs. ACLs will run because that ACLs totally apply to large language models. Right.
They understand the ACL model and I'm sure there's no way to break it.
No. And so what we're trying to point out before we jump into the next story, what we're trying to point out is the ACL model of old, the control mechanisms of old do not apply to the technology of today and tomorrow. Right. And we have not created those controls to really run with that massive arc of increase in technological advancement. And that is concerning. And that's what we're talking about right now. But we can go on and on. You know what we should probably do? Go
more news.
Next story. Yeah, next story. And continuing our talk about AI from channeled.com, a story from Ty Trumbull, the surge of AI integrated PC shipments predicted by 2025. According to Canalys, Now and Next for AI capable PCs report, AI integrated PCs are set to reach 40% of global shipments by 2025. With AI accelerators like NPUs driving productivity, personalization, and power efficiency. Canalys also expects AI-capable PCs to grow from 18% of total shipments in 2024 to 40% in 2025, with a projected compounded annual growth rate of 44% from 2024 to 2028. Economic benefits include 10% to 15% price premium for AI-capable PCs, which may increase their market value to over $270 billion, that's US, by 2028. Additionally, over 150 million AI-capable PCs are forecasted to ship through 2025, enabling enhanced user experiences and driving productivity gains, personalization, improved power efficiency, enhanced security, and reduced AI workload costs. Tom, there are so many good things, and we're going to talk about the good things. I love the reduction of power. I love security enhancements because I don't know how you feel about this, but people don't really need help with security, but let's just pretend that they did. And AI will be there on the box itself, the hardware itself, to assist with that in theory. But then we also have the, what's that called? Oh, the bullshit. Now, yes. So regarding the latter, there's your dolphins. What is actually involved? Because there's no way you're going to compact an entire large language model in there, but you may be able to, analogous to streaming, stream bits and pieces of processing. And I'm trying to figure out how that model will actually work. And what I'm trying to think of is this akin to, remember SETI? SETI, yep. Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence.
Yeah, yeah.
So is this a SETI model where everybody has a little bit of the processing power, but there is a centralized data model? Or am I stretching this too far?
I think you're stretching it too far. My son has an AI enhanced computer himself. It's called sticking a GPU in there. If you noticed, that's, you know, so what we want to say is we would like to increase the amount of money NVIDIA makes by having these GPUs. But don't worry, other people, because NVIDIA's getting backordered, are filling in the gap and making some of these GPUs that are going to be this way, which is kind of interesting. I mean, it does serve a purpose for the gaming world. So if you're into gaming, you need a good GPU. Turns out, though, GPUs are good at the type of processing needed for the AI. And this might be a reason to have a GPU in a laptop that didn't prior. Having some little specialized chips might make sense. There is some benefit to that. There's impressive numbers you can get with some of the Mac M series chips that they can be focused on AI. Once you get it out of your standard x86, I mean, you think about how long x86 has been hanging around with us, and you put it into some of those other special processors, they do lend themselves to a more efficient way to process different AI stuff. Or you think about stuff like your TensorFlow and having those chips. Those are actually relatively, I mean, you can pick those up in a relatively good price if you had those integrated in. Now, there's not been a reason to integrate it in there, but if you have local object recognition built in, it can look at what I'm doing and then assist me on my screen going, hey, that PowerPoint presentation is trash. Like, we're just going to fix it for you. What if we could do some of the art analysis and go, please? And then our PowerPoint presentations get business better. You know what I mean? Think about that. I think there's some
like that
that haven't been pushed as much that could become quite popular. And I think that could be interesting because right now there's not a big incentive for business users. They can use an older computer. So much of the stuff has moved to the web, including QuickBooks. The only, we get a lot of accounting firms. The only reason we upgraded the computers, QuickBooks got upgraded. That is the most garbage giant piece of software. Like, how does an accounting software need an i7 with 64 gigs of RAM?
And for a local version. And then if you web enable, you get the web, the QuickBooks service, you need a browser, which can literally run on anything.
Yep.
And so we're talking about the same thing because you mentioned 86. I remember buying my first 286, the 386, the 46. You remember all these 46? And by the way, when I was getting the 386, I remember getting stacks and stacks of those 3.5-inch floppies, thinking that was the future forever. And the new chips that are out there, because they're essentially ASICs, the application specific integrated circuit, for crunching the AI components, also video processing, GPUs, different from the CPUs. My question to you is, what is that going to do to affect the large language model that people are subscribing to? Is it going to be localized?
I think we're going to have a lot more of it. Just like we were just talking to Llama in the previous article, we're going to have something similar where there is a piece of it. So we want it to be local. And this is possibly why the whole stability AI thing relates to getting these in people's PCs, as opposed to trying to run them always at the data center level, might make sense. So that maybe we know where the CEO is heading over to one of the companies to try and help them integrate and build and streamline that. We're completely extrapolating off topic now, but I think we'll watch where he lands and, lands at insert name of PC maker, who then suddenly starts inserting AI chips, and a local copy ships with everything with some enhanced features. Wouldn't that be kind of cool? And we
can continue talking about this, but also in ways that we never imagined. Maybe the CEO is saying, maybe there's a way to completely decentralize the large language model as referred to in last week's episode, which is, I mean, that is where I see things going at a later time. But What are the odds of that? What are the odds? Well,
you get a free PC. You just have to lend it to the Greater SETI network. We decentralize out of data centers to a really decentralized global process where all my extra CPU cycles can be lent to our projects like this, and we create a better ecosystem.
And Windows 13 will be the decentralized. Look at you. It's going to be Linux. Well, Windows 13 is just the it sits on top of Linux. Okay, yeah. You know what we got to do? We got notables.
All right,
let's do it.
Now, my first notable comes from our friends over at Dark Reading. GitHub developers hit in a supply chain cyber attack. A sophisticated supply chain attack targeted members of the top.gg GitHub organization and individual developers, injecting malicious code into the ecosystem. Attackers compromised developers by hijacking the GitHub accounts, contributing malicious code, establishing a fake Python mirror, and releasing tainted packages on the PyPI registry. They employed sophisticated techniques to steal sensitive data, including cryptocurrency, wallets, social media credentials, evading detection. And although vigilant community members detected the attack, leading to domain takedowns, the threat remains very active. My next notable comes from The Verge. Microsoft Teams is enhancing its AI-powered Copilot with new features for meeting chats and summaries. Copilot will soon merge spoken transcripts and written chats into a single view, simplifying catch-up on missed meetings. It will also assist in composing chat messages, offering options to rephrase messages or add calls to action. In addition, Teams premium users will benefit from the intelligent call recaps, automating note-taking during phone calls. These upgrades aim to make Copilot more flexible, efficient with Teams, complementing Microsoft's broader efforts to enhance hybrid meeting experiences and expand carrier support for Teams Phone Mobile. And I can't wait just to watch all the bots just talk to each other on both sides.
In my first notable from ArsTechnica.com, MFA fatigue attack targets iPhone users with endless password reset prompts. Phishing attacks relentlessly target iPhone users through continuous password reset requests, exploiting a human tendency to just click impulsively. Known as MFA fatigue attacks, these assaults flood screens with repeated multi-factor authentication prompts, making dismissal challenging. Even tech-savvy individuals like Parth Patel have fallen victim to these attacks, facing over 100 notifications demanding password resets. Moreover, spoofed calls posing as Apple support further exacerbate the situation. Due to Apple's reset scheme's lack of adequate access controls, users remain vulnerable, highlighting the need to implement rate-limiting or FIDO-compliant MFA to mitigate these threats. In my next notable mention from ChannelEDE.com, Broadcom relaunches VMware Cloud Program with new benefits. Broadcom recently relaunched its VMware Cloud Service, that's VCSP program, aiming to standardize routes to market and enhance partner-driven adoption of the VMware Cloud Foundation platform. The updated program introduces new tiers and benefits to support partners in delivering managed services based on VMware Cloud Foundation. Additionally, partners can offer consistent VMware Cloud Foundation services across environments with simplified pricing and improved margins. Broadcom has also realigned the program into three tiers and introduced cloud commerce managers to streamline the operations and support partners in delivering a seamless hybrid cloud experience.
If you've been with us here on AI Roundup for a bit, then you already know one of my favorite segments from past episodes was AI Alert, where we featured images from around the web that were getting over on people. And these ranged from, you know, either pages posting them without realizing they were AI generated, all the way up to more nefarious activities where pages were definitely guilty of generating AI images on purpose and trying to conceal the fact or even just pass them off as real. And these were typically images of things that could definitely be discerned by a scrutinizing eye, but they were much more subtle than what we're seeing now. For example, there would be a beautiful sprawling house or an extremely impressive tiny living space, stained glass sinks, amazing sculptures by very young kids, and on and on and on. But the latest trend on Facebook is taking this activity to a whole new level. Not only are the images wildly more ridiculous, but the level to which these images and pages seem to be automated is pretty troubling. Now, don't get me wrong, I've been having a lot of fun with these images, as many of my friends in the Facebook meme communities. Images like impossibly built US and UK soldiers, African children, children building things from plastic bottles, and of course, all manner of different manifestations of Jesus, an air cabin crew, of course, and shrimps and sharks and mud, and well, I think you get the idea. These images, they're so outrageous that you can't help but be entertained by them, which is why so many of us have been getting a real kick out of the state of Facebook these days. But that being said, if you're not a shit poster, these activities are pretty, well, disturbing, especially once you start to look at the comments sections. These accounts are posting more than 60 times a day in most cases, and even though many of them don't get any traction, very often they'll have posts that garner tens of thousands of reactions, shares, and the comments go on and on and on with amen from any number of people or bots. There are plenty of amazing upcoming events taking place across the community, so let's see what's happening this week. Starting on Tuesday, April the 2nd, and running through the 5th, an in-person event, IT Sales and Marketing Boot Camp in Nashville, Tennessee. And also on Tuesday the 2nd at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, CyberWise Employees, How to Stay Safe Online, presented by Finn Security. And then on Wednesday, April 3rd at 1 p.m. Eastern, April Demo Day, presented by SaaS Alerts. And coming from the MSP Media Network this week, we have, just right after this episode at 11 o'clock Eastern Time, a new episode of MSP Community Live, followed just right after that at noon by Bits and Books, with episode 7 all about the Pumpkin Plan for Managed Service Providers by Dana Kava and Sean P. Walsh, who will be on the show. And then, of course, look out on Saturday at 10 a.m. Eastern for a standalone episode of MSP Dispatch.
So how'd you like today's show? If you like it, hit that thumbs up button. If you didn't, make sure you hit it an odd number of times so we still get the like and you get your satisfaction. Yeah. And if you want to hear more, go ahead and hit that subscribe button on YouTube or your favorite podcatcher. Did you know that we have a Discord where we post these stories all week long? You can even propose your own stories and even vote which ones we're going to cover. As our friend Rich Banky says, make sure you tell a friend. Be sure to follow us on social media at MSP Media TV. And if you have any questions, email us news@mspmedia.tv for answers on the next episode. Or just leave us a voicemail, 833-MSP-Network. Tom, thank you for co-hosting today. I am now going to pass this over to you because we covered so many awesome things and we got off on our little rants. And by the way, I just want to point out, you peer pressured me into donating to Signal when I switched accounts. Fine. I want everyone to understand I actually did it. And now I have the little rocket ship, but I don't have his icon because apparently he donates more, which means I'm going to donate more later.
I think it's how it works.
So go ahead, land this plane, sign us off.
Thank you all for joining. Looking forward to hearing from all of you. Tag us over in those socials, man. We love, discussing these stories and hearing suggestions for new ones.
Repost us all. Everyone, stay safe and educated. See y'all.
This has been a broadcast of the MSP Media Network.
In my first notable mention from ArsTechnica.com, MFA fatigue. You said it so many times, I'm going to say it the wrong way.